Hiya.
Anne-Marie.
Hello, let me just turn this radio off.
Okay.
The phone might ring, you know that.
That's fine.
Does that matter?
No, you just tell me it's a busy office and it's a busy day.
Okie dokie, that's what I shall do then.
Yeah.
So for sure.
Yeah.
Bing, 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 bing. When do you come over for Chelsea?
Come in on Tuesday, Monday, isn't it? Monday morning.
Oh, really? So you're flying in on Monday morning? Like really early doors? Or?
Yeah, be flight about 6:30 in London City Airport for about 8 o'clock, I think.
Oh, okay. And then just straight through.
Anyhow, let's get to good bits.
Okie dokie. Just hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Okie dokie, sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you.
Okay, you're with me.
Mind, body, not body, soul, mind and soul.
Okay.
They're laughing at me. Katerina's laughing at me.
Don't mind Katerina. She's a very good looking woman. She's just jealous. Okay, you ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon. You are tuned to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. You would not believe it, but about 14 months ago, we had a lady on by the name of Anne-Marie Powell. If I was to read her bio to you, it reads a little bit like so. She has presented for the BBC about 20 different garden design, garden history, and essentially gardening programs. One of those was 2016 coverage of the RHS Chelsea Flower Show for the BBC. She has also presented the Great Garden Challenge, which aired, my apologies, in 2015. Not only that, she was selected to design and build the RHS's, is that even a right word, garden at Chelsea Flower Show 2016, and that was the Greening Grey Britain garden. It is a pleasure, an absolute pleasure, to have her back on the phone. Anne-Marie Powell, how are you? Welcome back to the Sod Show.
It's an absolute joy to be back with you. So how are you?
I'm fantastic. The last time we spoke, Anne-Marie, we were in a pub post the Garden Media Guild Awards, which I should add to your list of credentials. You also presented that as well.
Yes, I did. Yeah. So I deserved a drink after all of that. So and it looked like you did too. There's no harm in a quick imbibe after a big award ceremony, in my opinion. So adds to the celebratory atmosphere of the day.
I remember being, I took a selfie with myself, Mark Diacono and Leah Leendertz, and within about 10 minutes I was in a pub with yourself and Mark Straver and a few others, and I didn't know where I was or what was exactly happening, to be quite fair, but you did a sterling job at presenting.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. So it's always a bit scary when you get on the stage in front of people, you know, the great and the good and the eminent and people who have been my heroes for, you know, all of my horticultural career before. So thank you for saying that. It means an awful lot to me. So, because, yeah, my nails were fairly bitten down. And as you know, I did need a drink afterwards. So.
Yes, a good night was had by all. And we shall leave those tales on stories right just there. Anne-Marie, let's go back a little bit. The garden was built at Chelsea Flower Show on behalf of the RHS. I think I noted to you at the time in interview, a greater, I guess, a barrel of praise, if I might call it that, you really cannot get from. Let's be quite frank about this. There is no greater horticultural body in the planet than the Royal Horticultural Society. Is that a fair way to surmise that?
I think you're probably right, yeah. So, and with good reason, I think. So, yeah, absolutely. Love the RHS. They do some fantastic work. So it was an absolute privilege and an honour to be asked for them to design and build their own garden at Chelsea, which, as you know, is the pinnacle for any garden designer and landscaper and plantsman. So, yeah.
We have a Chelsea Flower Show on the horizon next week. To put in context for those who are unaware of you, this is how I kind of see it. In 2015, you won gold at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show. And then pretty much in 2016, within a very short space of time, you almost ended up being catapulted into the spotlight, number one, but number two, on behalf of the RHS, if you did have any critics or any people waiting in the aisles, not to take the negative on it, but you were ripe for the kicking. Would that be a fair way to put it? And equally, when you get it right, you're ripe for the applause.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's quite funny because last year when I did show, I had a lot of very good friends who shall remain nameless, lots of whom were on Main Avenue, and they took great delight in saying to me, you know, Emery, your garden is not a garden, it's a trade stand. So that was quite funny. But in actual fact, I was doing the, you know, a garden for the biggest trade body, and they're a charity, don't forget, the RHS, not a trade body in actual fact, but for a big advertising punt for the RHS. So yeah, and I just wanted to do something that everybody who comes to show, no matter the budget, no matter their age, could take something back and just be encouraged to green their gardens back home and make all of our lives and streets a happier place to live in, really. So I took the bull by the horn. I think there were some fantastic trade stands there last year. So you look at Deber Harbour stands, Alitex's is always fantastic. So you had lovely Catherine's. There was just tons and tons. There's always tons of good stuff, no matter whether they're trade or show gardens, large or small, I think.
What's the pressure like, though, Anne-Marie, on the build-up to that? And again, let's be frank about it. You walk straight through the gates of Chelsea, a couple of hundred yards up on the left-hand side. These big, bright shipping containers painted orange, like literally jumped out off the page. To say you made a statement is probably... pardon me, but an understatement, so to speak. But not only did you do it extremely well, you did do it at the highest level. What was the pressure like on you as an individual, or do you tend to feel any of that at all?
I have to say, when the RHS asked me to do it, I was absolutely delighted and then absolutely scared as well to death, Carl. But I knew it was a privilege, and I knew that I wanted to do something that would really stand out and do my best, really. So because I'm a garden designer, and I know you're much the same, Peter. It's your life. It's your whole. It's the way you live. So you know that is what I am. It's actually in my bones. So, and I wanted to do something that was very much kind of true to myself. So I just decided that I would just go for it. And I'd learned. I did a garden for the British Heart Foundation at Chelsea in 2011, and that was a very small budget as well, as was the RHS's budget. So. That to stand out against the big boys and girls with huge, great checkbooks, you have to do something that really does shout for you to get noticed on that main avenue. So I'm a great advocate of colour. So I love colour. So I wear a lot of colour, and our gardens tend to be colourful places. The colour makes me feel happy. So I was delighted when I was going through my ideas to find out that the orange, screaming orange, is actually one of the RHS's colours. So I was delighted to see that, because I was thinking, we're going to have to go with a very kind of muted palette, because historically that's what the RHS has been. But it's a colourful place, and with orange on their sort of colour screens, that's why where the big orange container came from, really. So, and from that, that was the starting point. And from that, I just went with it, really. So, and just chose as many colours as possible so that it stood out to people, and it was fun, and it didn't take itself too seriously, and that people could enjoy it. So, because for me, that's what gardening is about, really.
But let's get into that bit then, because like you're talking to a guy, and not to kick myself in the bottom, but I built a show garden some years ago, which had a 33 foot long pleasure cruise boat that was painted bright pink with black tinted windows. And on one hand, I received equal amounts of criticism, I shall put it very eloquently just for the minute, and equal amounts of praise. But I knew, in a sense, before I had done that, that I was kind of going into that territory, let me call it that again. On the other hand, I and you, not to compare like with like in any way at all, but you more so in particular, you had an option where you could have played it extremely safe, or a lot safer. Is that a fair comment?
I don't think it even came into my head to play it safe. What is the point of playing things safe, quite honestly? We're only here once, aren't we? So, and I just saw it as an opportunity, to be honest. But when I've used colour at show, and I've used a lot of it, I just always make sure that there's a lot of green around as well, so that the colour isn't just shouting for a reason. And And I do kind of try to link colour around the garden. So there is a theme, there is a purpose for it. It's not just, you know, oh, I've decided that I'm going to paint this colour and just because I like it. It's sort of, there's always a reason behind it. I mean, my mad red Chelsea garden, as we call it, for the British Heart Foundation, I don't know if you saw it, Peter, but it had these huge great tubes that kind of strolled all the way through the garden. And we use red and green because they're opposite ends of the colour spectrum. And so everyone was so alarmed when all of this red was coming in. But then it was cooled down an awful lot by this wonderful palette of plants that were available for me to use that just really allowed me to play with texture against something that was, you know, very, very hard. And I think with the orange container at Chelsea, it was much the same thing. So, you know, I remember Paul Martin saying to me, like, you know, you've got the cool, calm and grown up down here, and at the bottom of main end you've got the mad, headachy, kind of wild end. So
that about sums it up quite well, to be fair.
but it was really, the colour was quite well, but when you were inside the space, I purposely made that very tranquil and a complete contrast to it. So when I'm playing with colour, I do try and have these kind of dips in wildness. And that's often given, as I said, by the foliage of plants. And with the orange container, it was very much in contrast to the very serene interior, which was pretty much just white and green with lots of ferns and a very pared back palette of what would be in a very grown up potting shed, really. So yeah, I don't just use it just willy-nilly, just go wild with my paintbrush. So it is considered. And I think maybe that's why, hopefully, people think things work. So yeah, that's my kind of taking it.
Were you a bit, and again, I don't mean to compare like with like, but how do I say this? Were you...
Just say it.
Were you a bit of a troublemaker growing up? Or did you find yourself getting into trouble growing up as a child?
Was I a troublemaker when I grew up?
Were you the type of person who took the biscuits out of the tin and put them under your dad's pillow and then blamed it on the dog? Were you one of those, Anne-Marie?
I wasn't a joker. I think my parents, my dad was in the army a lot, and my mum was at work all the time. I don't come from a rich background at all, so... So we spent a lot of time on our own, my sister and I suppose, and not in a neglect kind of way, I hasten to point out, but I was very much allowed, as we all were then, just to kind of go out and play on the street and I suppose just kind of look at the world from my own perspective. And then I was given the opportunity, because my dad was in the army, to go away to boarding school. And this opened up this gigantic world from coming from a very working class background. My dad comes from a Leeds mining family. So to all this opportunity with opera and music and sport and all sorts of things. So, and I just loved it and just did absolutely everything. But I wasn't particularly a ringleader of girls at school, but if anybody wanted to dare you to do something, then I would do it, because, you know, you're alive once and I, and there is no point, I think, in doing things by half measures. I am quite addictive in that sort of way. If I like something, then that is what I do. And so does that answer your question? Does it?
Well, it does. It I understand and I appreciate that you were not the ringleader, because that would be, how would you say, greater than promiscuous. It would be troublemaking by definition. But in the daring, well, I think it's probably fair to say most people would say, don't dare Peter, because he will do it. It won't be funny. And
exactly. Like, I was the girl who would be climbing out of the boarding house's window down the trellis, you know, just to go and pick an apple because someone had dared me to do it after hours, things like that. So, and yeah, I suppose I just, yeah, I enjoy life, always have, or still do. So, but I'd hate to be mean and get anybody else into trouble. So I've never been that type. So, yeah.
Well, can I rephrase this to you then?
Yeah. Go on.
Because I reckoned, or it has been said of me now that I'm a little bit apparently more mature, or I shave now. That's probably the greatest difference between me and younger Peter. That on one hand, I never stole, let's say, a handbag or a shop or anything like that. Not that kind of divilment, as my mother would have called it. But at the same token, I would have taught myself how to speed read at about age 13 or 14 so that I could spend more time dossing or getting up to divilment, if that makes sense to you. So I had no problem in school or in horticultural college, but there was always a why not rather than a why about me. Does that surmise you a little bit better?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I suppose it would be fair to call me slightly wild, but I think it's wild, not at the expense of others. So, with you know, I like to experience stuff. I'm a very experiential person. So, but I love learning. I love reading. I just love anything that's just new and different. And I will try anything once. Katerina, who's in my office, she used to teach the German Army, Swedish Army skydiving. So Green Fingers called me up and said, do you want to do a skydiver? I'm at work, by the way, Peter, you can probably tell. So do you want to do a skydive for us? So it's perennial. So and Katerina just basically signed me up without even asking me to do it. So and I was absolutely petrified, but loved it. So I will always try anything once. I've always enjoyed life, and I love partying as well. So I'll never grow out of that, I'm afraid. So
well, let's go to a different angle on it, because the horticulture side of things can have, if it's fair to say, and for you listening at home, I don't mean to be disrespectful in any of this. I know you're listening, and I ask these questions because they generally speaking pop into my head. I've got a blank sheet of paper in front of me with zero written down, and to be quite fair, again, for you listening at home, I was that child who, although I loved horticulture, I still kicked the ball into the garden that had the prize roses just to see the floor, the flowers, the petals kind of bounce off them and the angry man come out. And every street where I grew up had that angry man who had that prize garden, who was...
So you were a tyke.
What's a tyke?
A tyke, a naughty boy.
Well, I was a bit...
you were a bit naughty.
I was, okay. but it wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't badness, Anne-Marie. It wasn't badness. But it just seems to have, as I moved through the horticultural industry, let me call it that, I always seem to be on the peripheral. You know, when it gets past like about a half 11 at an awards night, people tend to kind of warm to me because it's I don't know, they've got a couple of drinks and a little bit of courage kind of thing. But prior to that, it's say, you know, don't sit too near to him because he might do X, and I'm obviously not that bad. But do you find in the horticultural industry that you maybe sometimes stand a little bit out from the crowd?
I don't know, to be honest. I've been really lucky and fortunate with my career in that I went to college back in, oh gosh, I can't remember now, like 96, 97, something like that. And then I was catapulted after working for a stint at Tender Care Nursery into TV. And it was kind of the sweet spot, so, of gardening television. And it was amazing that I met lots of sort of key players in the industry now, Andy Sturgeon, Clive Weston, Joe and James Alexander Sinclair. And so I got my posse quite early on, really, because it was unusual to be interested in garden design and gardens then. And I'm sure you'd say the same within our age group, really. So we just all just thought each other were brilliant, really. And so from being kind of in my mid-20s, those people have been my mates. And I think it's fair to say, without revealing any details, that we spent some pretty good times together late at night. So, and that's been my posse ever since, I suppose. So I hate to think that we're terribly cliquey, but you know, I'm lucky enough that when I go to show, then I'm generally hanging around with mates that we know each other's children and family, and go on holiday together and all sorts of things. So, because a lot of my garden life has become my social and home life as well, so I don't know if I stand out, so because I love meeting new people, but it's something I've never thought about in that regard. It's not something that that I kind of think I want to stand out. So you'd have to tell me if I stand out. I have no idea.
Well, it's not to the negative. And in all of these questions, I guess I place a little bit of myself in it. And I think I remember when I was about 10, 9 years of age, I had to write a story for school about myself. And my mother told me to write at the bottom of the page, "I am very, very unique." And I remember the teacher wrote a note at the bottom of it saying, "Very, very, very true." And he put an exclamation mark after it. And I didn't get it at that age, but I kind of do now, and that I am, as my dad would say now about me, I'm a little bit special. I'm also one of 8 children, and apparently they're not as special as me, and he winks at the rest of them, and there's a kind of a minor bit of hilarity, understandably, about that, and that's absolutely fine, but it's not to the negative that I suggest that. But
yeah, no, I know, I didn't think you did, to be honest. And I suppose that I'm a little bit different somehow, but I personally, because it's just me, this is just how I am. I couldn't pinpoint it. You'd have to ask my friends, and they'd probably say something similar to your teacher.
Well, let's take this from a design perspective, and we'll take something that happened maybe 1 or 2 years ago. I seem to see a little bit less of it now, and it's, I guess, attracting the younger generation into horticulture. And I remember talking to, there was a group of children that I had to do a talk to, and on the presentation, what I pulled up were gardens that I had designed, which were 17th and 18th century, and I showed them these pictures, and I'm not, that this would be knocking myself as versus anybody else, and then the next pictures I showed them were essentially your garden from Chelsea last year, and I said, spot the difference. And in context, one is bright and nouveau, and it's got a very modern day message, and one is a couple of hundred years old. In short, one is a little bit classical music, and one is, as I was would always say, it's a little bit Hendrix or Led Zepp or something along the lines of. Your designs, again, and when you take what you have done on gardens that you have mentioned previously already, they are bright and they are colourful, and the photographs of you, and as I saw you at Chelsea when the BBC were recording you, I mean, you have a very bright personality, but one that I would find quite, and in fact, extremely endearing.
Oh, you're very kind. You're very kind. When you were talking then, I was thinking about what my son, he's choosing his options, my eldest son at school at the moment, and there's an opportunity of taking a parent to have your interview with your teacher to discuss what you're going to choose for your O-levels, or GCSEs as they're now called, of course. So, and we were talking about this only last night, and my other half said, do you want one of us to come with you to school, Arch? And he just said, whichever one it is, can you please make sure it's not you, Mummy, because you are just too weird and you'll just embarrass me. And I was thinking, but I can't understand that at all, because I wouldn't go out of my way to embarrass him. But maybe, yeah, so maybe that's a good analogy as to how people think I'm a bit weird. But, you know, I have been influenced by an awful lot of things in my life. So, you know, we travelled a lot, and when I was younger, I got very involved in the Free Party movement. So, and that was really eye opening. So, because it's a lot of creative spirits, you know, with doing lots of things with sculpture and art and music. And I suppose maybe that's I loved it, and I loved music. And maybe that sort of comes out in my designs, because I think with age, you become much more happy to just be who you are, aren't you? And a lot more kind of confident in yourself to not really care what anybody else thinks of you. So it's very, very freeing as you get older. So I have to say, I prefer to be true to what I'd want to achieve than be worrying about what other people think about my work. And maybe that comes out and shows, and maybe that sort of part of my maturity, not just shows, my gardens as well. So, and our clients tend to be quite creative, free thinkers, I suppose. So,
as I listen to you now, I'm kind of placing myself in it, and I think around the time of about 13, 14, Special Peter, in inverted commas, found himself sometimes sitting on his own in the classroom and in the playground. And I think as I got a little bit a little bit older, my apologies, I think maybe I became that person who sat with about three or four until you get a little bit older, as you say. And in reality, when I look back, I never really cared what anybody thought, so long as I was never
exactly
going out of my way to upset them, which I never did. I was just a little
and
bit.
And time on your own can be very useful time, Peter, because people might go, oh, poor Peter sitting with it, but you can look at things, look around and observe. So it's very useful time. So to be, you know, slightly, and I think it makes you more observant, and you know, so I'm glad that you had that time on the playgrounds on your own, because it's made you the person that you are. So, you know, and in the nicest possible way. So it gave you confidence and courage, which is good.
I was never shy about getting up on stage, funnily enough, although at one point in time I was, but not anymore. Let's skip past that, because in all of the things I say here, Anne-Marie, I picked up a copy of Gardens Illustrated magazine a couple of days ago, and guess who was contained in there? It was one of your own gardens, if I'm open to correction, is it not?
No, it's just by the studio, so we just went for a walk, Charlie and I, and just took that shot. I have to say, I love Charlie Hopkinson's work. And whenever I've seen any of his photos, I've just thought that they've really captured the person within that space. So, and it was quite interesting, because we took all sorts of different sorts of photos. We even had me in kind of a long kind of embroidered dress and boots in the farmyard here. And we really went to town with it. But I was sort of a bit disappointed when I saw the picture, which was kind of like me looking quite mumsy and wintry, because I'd frozen my ass off in high heels in gardens. but you know, I hope it makes me look approachable, if nothing else.
Well, I have to say, to your credit, you are more than approachable, Anne-Marie. You are more than approachable.
I'm so proud, though, of that. I am so proud of that piece, though. It's just such an honour to be asked. But you know, it's always kind of one of my bucket list things, I have to say, to have that Who's Who feature in Gardens Illustrated. So I'm absolutely bowled over and very grateful to them for featuring me. I can't believe it. So I've been very fortunate and have to pinch myself lots throughout my career. And I am honestly so grateful for the opportunities that I've had. Yeah, it's been great. So thank you for reading it.
You're most welcome. They're also former guests of the show, for those of you listening at home. Doesn't he not say that enough? Anne-Marie, on the build to Chelsea, at this moment in time, we're about a week to go before we shall meet on press day, which I believe is Monday the 22nd. How are people feeling about this time? I think I described it with Charlotte Harris, who's building the Royal Bank of Canada garden, in brackets, former guest of the show as well, that it would be very much squeaky bum time.
It depends how the builds have gone, quite honestly. So, and I know Charlotte's actually, with military precision, has actually kind of really orchestrated her whole build. And they've had really good weather, actually, haven't they? And I follow with interest and relief that I'm not doing it this year, all of the activity on Twitter and Facebook and friends' accounts. So, but if the build is going well, you're really kind of almost ready just to get planting. So at this time, and I noticed from Hortus Loci's feeds on their social media accounts that plants have started going up, haven't they? And so it all depends how your build has gone. So, and everybody seems to me like pretty on schedule, because we've had hardly any rain, have we? So I don't know if they got the rain yesterday afternoon up in London. So, and this morning we had some here down in Hampshire, but they've had quite easy weather to work with. So I'm hoping, and it looks to me that everyone's pretty up to schedule. So you don't have an opportunity like you do when you build real gardens in real time for real clients to get kind of build weary. So because the pace is so frenetic. So, but it's always a lovely time when you get onto the planting. So because your hard landscaping is just so grey and hard, not necessarily grey, but hard, and that opportunity to finally start clothing the garden that you have been cherishing in your mind for at least a good year, and to see it all finally coming together after sleeping, thinking, dreaming about it for so very, very long. I think it will be a wonderful moment for everybody this weekend when they get their plants and start properly playing. So, and I'm sure they're all loving it, is the thing. So I don't see anybody on social media feeds that is particularly having a panic attack time on Main Avenue. Of course, the artisans and and the fresh gardens have slightly less time, so they start later on site. So I'm sure they're still perhaps in squeaky bum phase. So, but the mains, I think they look pretty much on schedule. So, yeah. What do you think?
Well, I think this is where we are going to pause it just for a minute. For those of you listening at home, if you're in iTunes, well, you probably should have waited until next week to listen to this episode, but it's probably a little bit late to tell you. But we've got Anne-Marie back on next week, so make yourself a cup of coffee next Thursday. Go listen to this episode again, and then I let one roll straight into the other, and we'll have Anne-Marie back on then as well. In the meantime, Anne-Marie Powell is on Twitter. She's at Anne-Marie, that's A-N-N, Anne-Marie Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L. At Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com. If you're stuck for any of this, we'll put you directly in touch with her. Tune in next week. Take care. God bless. Safe home. Bye-bye.